Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Peter Maxwell Slattery Show. And today, my guest is Bill, all the way in the United States in Kansas. How you going, Bill?
I'm doing good. I'm great, Peter. How are you?
Good, good. It's great to have you on the show. Now, would you like to just give us a quick overview of yourself? You're an engineer, author, and experiencer. Would you like to go into just who you are and your background?
Yes. I am an experiencer, and I've got a lot of interests that I've had over the years. I've been in aviation. I've been a private pilot. I love aircraft. I like aircraft and everything about airplanes. And since I was a young person, very young, I loved astronomy, and I love physics. And, of course, motorcycles and cars, you know, you start talking about those two things, and I always like to talk about them. But I'm an experiencer, and I've actually my experiences started when I was in my early 20s. I had a near-death experience. And so this fits in with modern miracles, I call it. And I actually started to leave my body. I was a young person, and it was kind of a strange time and a moment because of my background. I had never heard of this, and they barely got me to the hospital, and I wasn't breathing and everything. And I started to step out of my body right there in the emergency room. And then I was pushed back into the body, and after that, I kind of wondered what had happened to me. For about 4 to 6 weeks, and I never gave it much thought. But after that, I started having what they call precognition. Yep. I would know things before they happen, and I used it to my advantage. I will tell you that. I used it to my advantage, especially when I started working. I would get visions in my sleep on how to fix things or engineer things. And people always wondered, well, where did you come up with this? And I wasn't necessarily in my area of expertise either. It was outside of it. Sometimes I would hear about a problem or and something that needed to be solved. And there it was. I'd drive to work the next day, and I'd have a complete vision of what needed to be done. And I'd go tell somebody, and then they would run off and go do it. And out of that, I had one UFO sighting when I was in my teens, middle teens, where I actually had missing time. After I had to really think back at what I saw, and I saw a UFO, and I had other people with me, but they didn't want to believe what it was at the time. But from that, I recall we had missing time. We were in an automobile or vehicle, and it was at night when the UFO showed up, and there was a huge bright flash of light, and red and green lights appeared right on the road in front of us, much like some of the things I've seen since then after I got going here in 2009, when I had a astral vision at night while I was asleep, and I was standing in the presence of what looked like a ship with another tall being, a light being. I call it a light being or spiritual being. And they told me using telepathy that I would see UFOs. And I started laughing. And I actually woke up at laughing. That's how all of this began in 2009 as an experiencer, and started to see UFOs almost on a daily basis. And if I looked up in the sky. And from that, I have figured out how to take photographs and videotape these. I call it anomalies at first in the sky, because at first I didn't want to believe what I was seeing. But I actually believe that from that early experience of near death, that triggered something.
Yeah. Now, in my background. Well, I just want to say, just to remind or let the audience know that you're an engineer, and you've actually had a pilot. You were a pilot, weren't you, as well?
Yes.
So mm-hmm. You know what you're seeing in the sky.
Yes. Yes. I grew up knowing what aircraft were quite well. I lived in an area where a lot of aircraft are built, and I've flown myself when I was in my late teens. I had a private I was a private pilot. I flew quite often, and so I was used to seeing things and identifying things in the sky and what was around you. Now, I've never actually had seen any of the UFOs while I've been in the aircraft itself. When I was flying, I never witnessed anything. But because of my aircraft training, I know weather. I know about meteorology. I had to learn that science. So I quickly learned how to rule out things. And of course, my interest in astronomy. I had to know a little bit about weather, and I had to know something about optics and working with telescopes. And I know the difference between a star looking at night and these other anomalies and paranormal experiences of missing time and things like that, that just didn't, you know, you look at it from a technical side and logical side, this goes beyond that, which is interesting. That's why I've written a book, and I called it Beyond Watching, A Journal of Experiences Understanding UFOs, because this goes beyond watching, which is basically all I was doing in the beginning, was just watching what was going on. But as I had more experiences and the more observations I made, I started to look back into old documents and things. You know, I use the word the biblical documents, ancient civilizations. I've looked at that and tried to look for anything that would connect this and try to explain what was going on in my life. So that was how I got started in this, Peter. So it's been 30 plus years ago that I started having, after the near-death experience, that I started having these experiences.
Would you like to go into, or just give a quick overview of it? There's a technique you use for getting footage and photos of crafts, which I find interesting because I had not come across it. Would you like to go into that?
Yes. What I found out early on, as I said, I figured out that I could see the UFOs when I used a pair of polarized fit-over sunglasses. So I quickly learned to use the camera and shoot the picture through one of the extra lenses. And one day I popped out a lens out of a spare pair of glasses I had, and I taped it over the front of my digital camera and stood in my backyard. And I have a two-story structure or home, and I noticed I could block the sun and I could see all of these white orbs and ships moving around in the sky. And I took a couple of still frames and I looked at them quickly with my camera and noticed that, hey, I'm getting really good photographs. So I got the tripod out and set it up. And because I didn't want to look directly into the sun, and I aimed the camera up and I looked through the flip screen, and I could get it zoomed at I think it's 37 optical.
Yep.
And that gave me a really good photograph, a series of photographs and video, because I could run the DVD video also. And sometimes I'd let the video run for, you know, the full, let's say, 10 to 15 minutes. And you would see all these objects darting in and out, appearing, disappearing. And that's how I figured out how to do this, was quite by accident, just by looking up and figured out real quick that I could set up the camera on a tripod and let it do the holding. And eventually I got to where I could hold the camera by hand and support my arm and keep from shaking the camera too much, and I could take pictures on a professional mode. Now, what's interesting is I had to adjust the contrast or the light background on the camera to aim it. I aimed it at the large cumulus clouds. The bright white in the cumulus clouds is the sensitivity setting I have for the luminosity, I guess is the word I would want to use. So I set that up as the target that the camera picks up on. So if it sees something in the computer system in the camera, will lock in on objects that are bright white or giving off a lot of light energy and contrast. And once I figured that out, I have not touched it since 2009. I've kind of left it alone. And as I've shown you in the past, I get some amazing photographs of objects, and that's the first method, and I just call it the sunblock viewing method. And the first person that came up with this that documented it, was his name was John Bro, and I believe he still has a website that's up and active running these days. And he was amazed that I figured this out myself without even seeing his website, but after I talked to him, it became apparent that we both stumbled across it during our lifetimes.
So, you've got a lot of different types of crafts and anomalies in it, where just before the show we were talking about the wide variety, and a lot of people just think, you know, there's just a flying saucer or a cigar, you know, they're the only two types of crafts. And like I said, you know, I've told many people, you know, that there's way more than that, and you've seemed to pick up some amazing ones where they're high energy. They're really sort of like almost like a starlight. The brightness of them, and even how they look, is almost like a starlight. But you've got structure, you've got shape, and there's many varieties. But also you've got weird stuff like that's something that really grabbed my attention, because it's a photo and you see like these numbers in it, which, you know, is really funny because that's just something, you know, is, you know, just right out there, but it's there. I've seen them. You showed me many. You sent me I think it was a presentation you did for MOOF on the slideshow, and going through that, there was many variety. And you've even sent me photos in the past of other people's photos where it's basically the same object, and you've taken one and somebody else has taken the other, and they're basically mirror images of each other. So it's not just you getting this, or the other bloke that had been doing this for a while. Other people are getting the same structures.
Well, that is the biggest confirmation I have, is that two experiencers that I know that I communicate with regularly, one in Canada and another in Australia, is that they can see an anomaly or a UFO at night, and they'll have two or three even behind it. And these have appeared even all over YouTube and things like that I've seen. And I get the picture in the daytime and they get the picture at nighttime. And when you superimpose them side by side and look at it, it's the same structure, which is the first thing that amazed me. And now, this started 2 years ago. I started communicating with people and they were only seeing this at night, because that it started about 2 years ago. What I'd started doing is looking it towards the direction of the sun. I don't block the sun, but I actually just hold the camera up and aim it in the direction of the sun, Peter. And that's when I get the photographs that start to show the whole field. Once you let the light in, you know, you can see the prism effect from the sun, obviously. But with the filter on, the polarized filter, you end up seeing, they look almost like, I use the word, they look like ornaments. They are very, very clear many times. It isn't always the same shape either, and yet they're almost I use the word holographic. they have a hologram look to them.
Yeah, I totally agree with that too, and we've spoken about that in the past. There's definitely that aspect to it.
Mm-hmm. And I've talked to an astrophysicist that during my adventures, I call it an adventure, but my experiences, and that was the first thing that he commented on was the fact that what I may be recording are actually quantum holograms. And that was the first time I had heard of that. And he explained it to me, and he said that imagery could actually be it's like looking through an energy that's there. They're actually presenting themselves and projecting their energy is coming forward because the camera picks it up. The camera absolutely picks it up, the energy, because it locates and puts a find, a rectangular
box, yeah,
shape.
Yep.
It boxes it in multiple hits. You'll get multiple hits. And I know once I get that I'm going to get a good picture, actually. And what's even stranger is sometimes I actually know that some intelligence has taken over the camera because the camera will not focus, but only where it shows the image that you were talking about that had the numbers written into it. And the whole sky will have very crisp, little white, they look like ornaments or clear, they're very clear, and there's millions of them. And I'm not just talking one or two, but the whole sky, the background, and the imagery in front. And the first time I had that happen, I thought the camera was failing. And it's happened more and more frequently as I've taken time to take more photos. It seems like an intelligence has taken over the camera. It really does. And I call that a sun-refracted viewing technique because I actually let the sun come in and I hold my camera about 60 degrees up and aim above the sun about 60 degrees.
And it's slightly being blocked out by the building where you're facing towards too, isn't it?
Sometimes I do that. Yes, I can do that. I can block the sun just to aid me so I can kind of shield my eyes. But I've had other times near sunset, I can really see this, where the sun's not as intense, and I can stand in the wide open. I can be in the open and do this. Now, I don't look directly. I look into my flip screen. I have it aimed down.
Yeah, yep.
Turned down. So I'm not looking directly in the sun. I am wearing sunglasses. I'm fully protected when I do that, and I do not look directly at the sun. And I can do that with or without the tripod, but the tripod will give you a really stable image.
Yeah, yep.
A consistent image. So I use my tripod to hold it. Then I don't get any shaking or movement from it. Especially on windy days or the atmosphere's kind of turbulent, I've found it's easier to do that. But I can do it in the video mode or take stills using the either method, the sun refracted or the where I block the sun, the solar blocking method. But it's proven to work. What's interesting is the number, like you said, the number of different shapes and sizes. There's definitely orbs, what I call white orbs.
Yeah.
I've got videos of these, Peter, where they've actually, in the very beginning, the only words I can use is they were battling each other. There was a fight going on.
Yeah, you tell us about that. You've told me about that before. That was fascinating.
Right. I have taken stills and videos of orbs, and prior to that, I would see ships would appear like bright stars in the daylight away from the sun. It didn't have to be in the sun, would appear, and I had binoculars, 6-power binoculars, and had my sunglasses on. Now, if you don't have the sunglasses, I couldn't see it. But once I had the sunglasses on and looked through the binoculars, I could see ships appear, dump millions of orbs into the sky. I mean, there were so many, I couldn't count. I don't even know how you could count them. There were so many. And then I followed them for 2 hours. They battled another set of orbs that were bigger. Now, that's the difference, is there were small orbs and big orbs. I would say that the orbs that were small were approximately 2 to 3 meters in diameter. Jeez. And the bigger orbs were double that. They were bigger. They were about twice the size.
So good size.
They were good size, and I could track the large ones easier than the small ones. But I've actually, they came over my home at my house at about probably between 200 and 400 feet in the air. I don't know what that converts to the metric, but they were fairly low. I mean, I could see them with my naked eye without the camera, even looking through the camera. And this would last for 2 hours, and it looked like a battle. And then, mysterious as it is, and I show this in my book, there was actually another ship came down, had another ship, a smaller ship, detached from it, and it looked like it had a tube or a port that came up, and this moved around. I've got video of this, and it looked like a bright little orange star. It was that bright. And I followed it through the sky and tracked with it and took still pictures also. It literally was going around and picking up the small orbs. And I've actually have video of the large orb coming up and striking a smaller orb and deflecting it. I actually have this, and they levitate. They kind of, if you've seen the and heard of UFOs where they'll kind of levitate, but they're not very stable. They kind of wobble.
Yeah, yeah.
These would do, the big ones would do that much more because they were bigger. You could see the effect. But the small ones were much faster. But the bigger ones, once they caught up, and they would literally strike the smaller orbs. And then after that, the smaller orbs would just disappear. I don't know if they had some damage or something, but they would disappear. But definitely the bigger orbs would always win these battles. I don't know what significance that is, but they actually had another ship, I call it a tending ship, come around and pick up the small orbs at about 2 hours, approximately 2 hours after these battles would start. And previously in the day, I would see huge ships flying tandem to one another, make rapid streaks across the sky and then separate going in two different directions. So there'd be basically two ships. And that's what caught my attention also. I thought that was strange because before these battles would take place, there would always be a large ship or a group of ships that would show up like that and just dump orbs out the back of them. Very strange. Very strange.
Ah, that's cool. That's good. And now you've had other people with you too, looking through the Polaroids that have witnessed these crafts with you, haven't they?
Yes, they have. I've had friends, co-workers, and I've had neighbors. They've seen the same events in the sky many times. I'd go and point them out, and they stood there and witnessed the same events with me where the whole sky was filled up with these white orbs and ships. And I'm there with my camera taking pictures, of course. And they were quite interested in what we were seeing. And the first time I ever saw an orb, after I got comfortable with it, my neighbors, for instance, two different occasions, the orbs made a perfect right triangle. I mean, it was a perfectly formed triangle with 3 points. And I just told my neighbor to look up in the sky behind you. And I pointed in the sky, and there they were. And then they all broke. One went equal in 3 different directions. So I knew once I saw that there was intelligence in operation here. Yeah. Until then, I wasn't sure if there was intelligence behind it. But after what I witnessed twice with my neighbors and seeing these perfectly geometrically shaped orbs, you know, making a 3-pointed triangle, I knew there was some intelligence behind it. And they moved quickly enough to where when you were standing there, you knew you had seen something. It wasn't a shimmer in the sky, and the sun was behind us. So we're looking to the north. Since we're in the northern hemisphere, which shouldn't have caused anything. But what you were seeing, there was no bad weather. It was a beautiful, clear day when these events happen also.
I suppose. Now, have you had any stuff like high strangeness or orbs come into your house?
I have had, outside of my home, I've actually had photographs recently. Yes, I've actually seen anomalies. I've seen, let's say, heads. It looks like a head of a. I don't want to use the word gray because it really wasn't gray.
You actually sent that to me. Yeah, that was a pretty good pick too. And yeah, yes. That was weird.
And I've had strange things happen to my automobile, to my car. I've had my electric razor that I shave with come on and off in the middle of the night, mysteriously. That's a good one. You know, there's been – I don't have, like, lights going on and off in the house, but I have in the past had my automobile, the classic where the windshield wipers went on by themselves, the lights are flashing on by themselves, and the car horn, I remember, also signaled a few times. And as a result, I found out later that the main power cable from the alternator and generator on the automobile, half of the wiring had been blown through. There was only like a few strands of actual twisted cable left to run the power to the automobile so it would run. And that is the worst that has happened to me. Of course, I've had a complete computer in the past, and it also it didn't work. It was like the motherboard had been fried.
Yeah, that happened to me three times. Right. We were talking about that because that's when you're saying get your stuff on the DVDs and, you know, it'll be good. Yeah, yes. And I've started doing that, mate. I went and bought bloody 50 of them and pulled everything on there that I could. So that was strange.
What I've noticed, I know, that's what I've noticed is that I figured out early on some of my files were just kept on a memory stick, a very simple, device.
Yeah.
But anything that had been put onto the DVD, which is basically a holographic image, whatever is behind this could not mess with that. Those images are burned into the coating on the DVD, and they cannot touch that. I quickly figured that out, and so I started saving things to DVD, that all of that went away. They are not able to touch that. They have touched my camera and wiped out the SD card at the very beginning. Something did. I'm not sure exactly who was involved in that, but yeah, I've had that kind of paranormal activity happen. I guess the strangest thing I've had happen are the what I call astral visions, where I was actually told I would see UFOs, Peter. That was how this all started to take place. And I've had at least two other astral visions where I was aboard a ship. I was taken on astrally while I was asleep in the unconscious state. And I have very good images in my mind, and I could sketch up, and I was shown things that were quite amazing. I guess you could use the word technology, but my experience was I was shown around, and there were other people there also, besides beings. I mean, there were other humans present.
Could you describe the structure or what you were shown, if you can?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What I was shown is I was shown what I've come to believe is like the power room, the where the power for operating the ship comes from.
So
it'll
be the power plant and the energy that runs the propulsion?
The energy, right. And I remember seeing a large cube. It was a huge rectangle, three-dimensional cube that was all black. And it took up most of the room that I was in, and I was being led around by a being, and the being was a tall, white robed individual. I never did really see a face. I could make out a head.
Was he like a,
say that?
That you were interacting with Jerome was white light.
Yeah, they were. Their body would almost light up the room you were in. That's where the lighting came from. So if, as you moved along, everything in the room would kind of turn dark again because there wasn't natural light like we have. Like you wouldn't go turn on the lights in the room. But as I stayed with the being, I always had light around me. But there are no stairs. Everything is on a ramped levels. You go from one level to the next. And everything was like a curved walkway. It was very easy to maneuver your body. It was just like walking up an incline. And that's what I noticed, the structure of this ship. And there were two things. The outer wall was white and would give off some light, but it almost looked as if it wasn't made of a metal or anything that we have here in our three-dimensional space that we live in. It looked almost like it was biological. It had substance and energy, like life energy or something through it.
Yeah.
But the main structure inside that I saw, I got to look at the decking because I came from one level to the next to the main room in this ship. And the decking is about 2 inches thick. And it's black, and then as you get to the top level, it has a white surface on it, the same living surface. I that's the only words I can use, is it looked like it had energy coming from it. And that's when I came into the grand room that had a column of light coming up through the floor with a hand railing around it. Now, I thought that was strange, but it was a hand railing. And the being, I asked mentally, can I go see this? So I immediately had the response, yes, it's okay to see this. So I literally ran over to it. I was that excited to see. And then I looked up, and this ship is huge. There's another decking above us where people were up there looking back at me, looking down.
Now, were they humans or were they beings as well?
It was a combination of humans and these tall white robe beings, just like the one that was leading me. But the one that was with me soon followed and caught up with me because I could feel its presence behind me on my right side. But I looked at this huge column of light, and it had a very soft look to it. But the whole room was about 30 feet in diameter. There was no markings on the walls or anything. It was just all white. Like a white marble effect. And what intrigued me was I so desperately wanted to touch this because it looked like it had substance to it. So I stuck my left hand into the light, and Peter, it had a immediate, I shouldn't say, it had the temperature, and it had a warm temperature to it. And it felt like I was putting my hand on a feather pillow, you know, that you would lay your head on. It was that soft, but it would give as I pushed into it. And I probably would say within 3 seconds, I looked down at the hand railing. And my hand was still in the light column, but I looked down at the hand railing, which would have been at my waist, and immediately everything around us all condensed into a black space or dot. It's like we went through a wormhole. I don't know how to describe it other than that. And immediately I'm moving through space, literally in outer space, and being followed like through a string. That's the only word I can use, like a clear string, conduit or something. And this tall being is with me. Somehow it got in there with me, and it's standing right behind me. And the acceleration was unbelievable. We were moving so fast that finally I didn't know where we were going. It seemed like my mind was taking me somewhere, and this wasn't like a dream either. I don't know where we were heading, and I started yelling because I knew this being, whatever, was behind me and would listen to me because we had already been communicating. And I immediately started yelling at the top of my lungs, please stop this. I don't know where we're going. And my fear took over. It was that part. And then I immediately woke up screaming and yelling from my sleep. But the experience, I immediately started drawing everything. And I had one photograph that was picked up immediately after that time period, Peter. I know it's the ship I was on, and I call it a light ship because there's so much light and energy that comes off of these ships, and what I was shown, it runs off of this light energy. And other people call it orgone energy or life energy.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And I know others have talked about that from my other experiencers. Have delved into that, and I don't know what words to use except this energy is like light. It looks like light. But it has substance.
Yeah,
to
it's
it,
very hard to describe because I've tried describing it to people, but it's like you have to actually see it for yourself to understand what we're saying because it's light, but it's right. Not a normal light. It's just yeah.
Well. Perhaps I can exchange a photo or something you could use in the future to illustrate this because my recent experiences starting in June of this year using the refracted method of taking photos, I've been able to take photos that show what I call light ships, but they change. And they actually, it may be a form of communication, I don't know, but they put a tunnel of light above their ship. And that started in June of this year, where that method of communication is how I'm interpreting it, but it looks exactly like the column of light I saw.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Exactly like it. And I've seen this ship turn into other shapes over, let's say, a series of 45 still photographs.
Yeah, shapeshift.
Correct. It turns into what I call Merkaba, the pyramid on top of a pyramid. There's an upward and a lower facing pyramid. I've seen the ships, after they've shown me that light column above their ship, then transfigure into a Merkaba. And I had to go do some research to even know what a Merkaba was, which gets into some ancient mysticism and things like that. But it's a light, they call it a light body. And that's the best description I've come up with. It's a light body of some kind where the ships are almost like they have structure, but it's alive. Or that's the best explanation I can come up with. To illustrate what I'm talking about, but perhaps I can share that, or you could share that with
others.
Yeah,
I've got a lot of photos similar to what you're talking about. Even like 2 nights ago, my neighbor and my friend that's up here from Bendigo, like we saw 4 crafts at the same time. I filmed them. They were there at the exact same time, but just and got many photos, color photos or infrared stuff of the light. The infrared sort of doesn't show the light in its purity because, you know, it's in infrared, but I know exactly what you're saying with the light. Now, with the propulsion system in that craft you're talking about, I've said to you before, which, you know, what comes to my mind every time I hear that from you is that when you go into it and you're in space, like you go into the black cube, you go into it and all of a sudden you're in black space, what gets me is that, you know, there's a lot of scientists going on about how 1 square centimeter of space, if you can drive it and tap into it, is enough energy to run the whole Earth for one day. And I'm thinking what comes to mind is that when you've gone in there, and as you said, you were in space, it's like as if the energy to run the craft or put the field around or whatever, however they do it, to me, it's like as if they tap the fabric of space to do that. That's just what comes to my mind when you're talking that, because, as you know, you're in a room, then you're in the cube, and then you're in space. You know, it's
That's
what
it.
Gets me in.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly
with
it.
With the last photo you're talking about too, we've talked about how that might be pinpointing to a form of propulsion. Now, you sent me a pattern in the US there of some type of vacuum propulsion. I forget the – but that was read through. And you thought that, do you think that's pointing you towards something with the engineering and the propulsion system?
That's what I've come to the conclusion that there's something where the energy itself, once it's been trapped and captured in this light form, it's sent up and it's put out onto the surface of the craft. Okay? And once it's there, there has to be some kind of a translation that occurs that actually this is getting into what Tesla, I think, was trying to do with his coils, the electrodynamic coils that he worked with. And what ends up happening, because it's easy to see in some of my photographs, and the astrophysicist helped me with this that I talked to, he claimed that the camera, because of the ability of the camera, the way it's picking up energy, is unable to assign a color code number in the what they call the bare mask, and that's a part of the collection, the way the computer and the camera collects and assigns a color code number for the little pixels. And where there's so much energy, it has to turn that area black. Okay, so when I look at the ships, I know where this high energy is being radiated from, because you'll see black dots or very heavily pixelated areas on the ship. And from that, this vacuum state propulsion, I believe, it's illustrated quite well in the patent that I found, that there's they're basically, you've heard other people use their amplifiers. And if you put so much energy out there, you will distort gravity. I'm convinced of that. I think that's how this all works. And there are stages that these ships can go through. I've seen it where they've turned from one state to another, like they're charging up to leave. And they literally go through a process, Peter, that I've got on videotape and in stills, where within 10 seconds they can they start as one ship, they'll get very intense white color to them, then they'll split apart into two. Now this is where it gets real interesting, is that I believe what they're doing is in quantum physics there's a term called non-locality entanglement. Are you familiar with that?
No, I've heard of that before. Would you like to teach me about that and the listeners.
Yeah. What it does is you can have two particles. They've done this in labs.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Go on.
Yeah, they can have two objects independent, but they're identical, and they can do the same thing any given distance apart from each other. Now, I believe I've actually seen a ship turn into two ships. They go through this process of splitting into two. They look alike at one point. They'll look exactly alike, and then they both blank out and go away. It's like they leave our space-time, is what I believe they're doing. And it's simultaneous. And to do this, I think they're linked telepathically, their length somehow to what's going on. And it's quite interesting to see this, and I believe it's being directed by the extraterrestrials, or I call them extraterrestrials or spirit beings, actually from another space-time.
Yep.
And they're coming in and out of our space-time, where the one that's the real entity, perhaps, is the one that will stay on the other side, let's say in space A, and they're coming into our space B, which is our space-time. And they go in and out of our space-time. This is what we're seeing, or are ships that have this ability, and they do this with thought and high energy. They can do this and go from one state to the next by transforming their matter.
Exactly. Yeah, I've seen it, mate. I know exactly what you're going to saying with that, because that's exactly the way it is, especially the telepathic part of it, you know, and that's why they can go through walls or what, you know, do whatever they want to do. But that's fascinating how you say that, you know, basically they're in another dimension or different density, popping through here to be, and then they're able to do that to when they go back, you know, they split up and they're here as well.
Yeah, they literally can split apart into two entities. I've got several videos of this and a good series of stills that point to this. And that's the first thing that really caught my attention. And I started looking for some answers. And I came up with the non-locality experiments.
Yeah, well, science looks in. I've seen that myself. And, you know, it's valid. It's been looked into. It's not just something you're coming up with, you know, the top of your head or some theory. It's got some substance to it.
Right. Now, there's some other things that have gone along with these appearances that I see and the changes that occurred, especially in 2010, 2011, and through 2012. And in the beginning, especially 2010, you know, the increase in earthquakes, major earthquakes started. You're familiar when the Haiti earthquake?
Oh, yeah, place. Mate. I think I put that in one of my documentaries, and the actual – I went through a lot of things sort of like that in my second last documentary, The New Era, and totally agree with you. It's all up, definitely.
Right. Well, what's interesting is in my second astral vision I had, I was shown in the ship on a monitor the Earth. We were looking from space back at the Earth, and I – could see the Earth going through some very dynamic changes. That's all I can tell you. I mean, I saw plate tectonics and the Earth moving. I could hear men, women, and children screaming and making noises and crying out for help. And at the same time, my photographs changed, Peter. Anytime I noticed that the earthquakes would go above 5.0 and to 5.5 on the Richter scale, the type of ships and the number of ships they would get become the day before, there'd be a lot of activity in the sky that I could see. And I don't want to frighten people, but I kind of put together, and I've seen this, where the day before there's a lot of activity that was to have occurred, the ships became very, very clear, and the numbers increased, actually. And I could see a lot of clarity in them, which I found strange, but I started kind of, it was almost like you could feel the energy. It's like they were, the energy was changing or something in the atmosphere, but there were a lot of changes that occurred with the weather and with the increase in earthquakes when I would start seeing more of these UFOs. Now, in the last year, you know, a lot of the earthquake since the earthquake in Japan occurred at Fukushima, that earthquake in Japan, the night before in the evening, I took stills. And sure enough, I had a precognition that there was going to be something happening when I woke up the next day. And I based a little bit of it on what I had seen that evening. And I saw ships very, very clear. And I started putting this together. I don't know why. I just knew there was going to be an earthquake, and it did happen. And after that, for a period of about a year, I was very sensitive to earthquakes. Since then, things have kind of quieted down a little bit. And the number of UFOs that I'm seeing up near the sun using the sunblock method has diminished somewhat. I don't see these battles taking place, and I don't see as many, and the numbers have come down a little bit. And I've noticed that the earthquakes, there aren't as many recordings above 5.0 anymore. So that's something interesting that I kind of put together from my own observations.
It's fascinating because even from my own experiences, one of the beings in particular, Shiji from the Pleiades. She's from the Dharma Rope, you know, and she sometimes appears human, but she's very similar. I know what you mean by the white light with the beings, because she's in a natural state, just a white light being. But I've had the same stuff projected to me in my mind with the earthquakes and a lot of the earth changes, and they're doing a lot of monitoring with what's going on and trying to manipulate some things where they can help and other things they just can't do much about. So it's very interesting you brought that up, because that sort of just mirrors with me. And you know, work a lot of us where it gets to hardcore stuff, as in the shift that's taking place now. Now, when we first started speaking, it was probably a month and a half, 2 months ago. We've talked quite a few hours in between that time. It was very interesting your take on the shift and the new world type of thing, or the new earth, as we've spoken about, because you've had it shown to you differently from myself, but the outcome's pretty much similar, isn't it, from what we've spoken about? And would you like to just let the listeners know about your experience with how this occurred to you, the shift, yep. and just what led up to what happens just before it?
Yeah, what happens from my own? I had an astral vision. And it's been the last one that I've ever actually had where I was shown anything like this, or being involved in where I've actually seen a ship in the sky. And it occurs while I'm standing, getting out of my car or automobile, and I'm looking to the north, and the sun's behind me over my right shoulder in the afternoon. It's a beautiful, clear day. And all of a sudden, I see a flash of white light. And I'm wearing my sunglasses, so I kind of look over my shoulder to see what was going on towards the sun. And all of a sudden, I look back in front of me, straight ahead of me, and there's kind of a distorted wave coming from the north, from all the way at the top of the sky, that as far up as you could look, straight down to the ground level. And it's moving towards me, and everything behind it is kind of blurred or distorted. And immediately I remember seeing from some of my photographs where the beings taking pictures for me, this distortion. And I've seen it present. And from that, it just sweeps across the parking lot. There's people in the parking lot coming out of a store. There's you know, people from all walks of life. And one's taken, or excuse me, one is kept, and two are taken, usually. That was the ratio, 2 to 1. So we are literally, once it hits me, I could see people lifting up or moving away up into the sky. It looked like we were going to go into the sky, and I literally was lifted up, and at about 200 feet above the parking, then everything just ends abruptly. And I woke up and immediately wrote down what I saw and the description of it. And I've been able to actually, you're going to love this. I've actually gone on to Google Earth and found the place where this occurs, and actually could change the sky. You know, they drive around and you have a street level, and I could change the sky to look the way this looked.
That's awesome.
And what's interesting is it looks exactly like some of the photographs I have when I look up towards the sun, or even off slightly to a slight angle to the sun with my camera. And all of a sudden, the sky is full of orbs and ships. And some are halfway in and some are halfway out of this distortion. And that is exactly immediately I tied the two together, that this has to be interrelated. And I talked to you. And I talked to several other experiencers, and we're all kind of talking the same thing happening, where there's a break in space-time. I don't
exactly.
know how to describe
and
it.
I'm just getting goosebumps again just thinking about it and how I've talked to you, because how it was exposed to me was I saw through Shidi, I saw another planet or another Earth kind of that we're in now or on now.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes,
it was basically those who are ready to go to the new Earth, they can go there, or they will go there, and those who aren't ready will stay here. And like I spoke to you, it's like after I wrote my third book, which was the second one on my experiences, My Awakening Part 2, I read the whole book before it came out, and then I thought, darn, I get it now, because I had to go back and write the last chapter, and later on everything was confirmed and more going into those who are ready will go and those who aren't ready will, you know, stay here. And it's not like you're going to hell. Those who are ready to evolve to the next stage of their spiritual evolution, because many have been trapped here, and that's why the star seeds have come down here to help break that karma, and there's a lot that can move on. And then those who aren't ready, it's not like they're bad people. They just haven't got to where they've got to get to yet, so they'll stay here till they develop further in their spiritual and conscious evolution. But you're right. It's basically there's so many different spins on it. Dolores Cannon says similar stuff to me and yourself and others, and that's what it is. And it's funny that we're all sort of guided to connect up, because it's like we're meant to be able to network about this, and it's more validity to us for going towards a little bit. This isn't a dream, or you need to show me this, because there's something to it. And like Rodwell says about dreams, it's like, you know, you don't remember dreams that far in detail if it was a dream. Usually a dream you wake up within a few minutes or at all, you know you dreamt, but you can't remember what you dreamt about. You know, that's a dream.
Correct.
So I've spoken to you about that too. And the detail you have in how you've described that in detail a lot more, but how you do that, it's not a dream, because the detail and the people and how you've gone and researched that particular experience, you just wouldn't do that about, you know, a normal dream. The detail you bring to the plate on it is very fascinating for me, because I feel what you're saying when you've gone into it. So it's very fascinating, that type of thing. And like you said, you're speaking to others as well as me, the correlations with that type of thing.
Yeah, that's been the hardest part about it is that it doesn't seem like a dream. I know too much. I can reflect on it right now in my memory as if it just happened, like I just awoke and came back, and it just doesn't go away. You just don't do that with dreams. You don't wake up remembering every detail. I can remember what people were wearing.
Yeah.
You see where I'm
going?
Oh,
exactly. That's what I wanted to point
out. I think that's the weird part about it, is that you remember even what you were wearing and what other people, if there were other people there, you can even remember what they were wearing. Now, I can't do that with any other. I don't remember what I dreamed last night.
You can remember where the sun was, the weather, all that. You've described it to me, and that's why it's fascinating, because you just wouldn't go into that detail otherwise. But
exactly. And I even remember the time of the year it was in also.
Yeah.
And I could tell because of how people were dressed and the foliage on the trees and the vegetation.
Now, it gives...
That's the weird part about it.
It gives some food for thought, people, because... And like I say to a lot of people, a lot of people just don't... You know, they're blown out that a lot of my interactions are in a conscious state like I'm talking to you now. But like I say to a lot of people, everyone's got their own connection and their own communication going on. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be – it's different for the individual, whether it's they don't want to, you know, screw too much with your, you know, body computer and how function in day-to-day. They'll work on a subtle level, or you'll have this astral trips, which, you know, I do a lot of with meditation. So just because a lot of people are having – and this is where some people would rather stick with, you know, the physical type stuff that happens with me, where a lot of it does also happen how it does with you, but mainly it's in a conscious state. But just because it's in an astral state, doesn't diminish in the validity, you know, you can give it, because it's how they work with you and how you want to work with them on a on a not knowing level in your really subconscious, which is really consciousness, your consciousness, you probably agree to this level of interaction so you can still function. So it's done in such a way where we're working in with them and they're working in with us. So, and I know what you mean. Like, there's experiences that I've had where when I do contact work or whatever, I'll be on the ground pointing the laser about to get the camera ready when I'm looking at the craft. But at the same time, I'm on the craft, communicating, looking out of the craft, and then I'm in a higher state of consciousness looking down on all of it, remote viewing the whole situation. And this is an aspect where it goes way out, but these are the types of things that I thought I was looping for a while, but then I've read books, and Dr. Stephen Greer, he writes similar stuff in his book. That sounds pretty far out there, but that's just the truth with it. And I think the more awakened you become, these other aspects that, you know, once you thought might be a load of crap or just too far out there, more science fiction type of thing, they actually are reality. It's just, you know, taking the blinders off and just not having any preconceived notion or thinking you know what you don't actually know or have experienced. So I think with the astral experiences, I give them just as much validity as in an experience like you or me talking right now in the physical world.
Mm-hmm. Well, I agree with you. And what's interesting about the astral visions I've had while I'm asleep, in that state, imitate exactly what happened as I started. It was the same feeling or experience as my near-death experience, where I knew at the time that I had an astral body, because I remember seeing it as I was leaving my body, my physical body. I looked back and I could see it, and that's when I got pushed back into my body, and then all the pain came back and everything else associated with what brought on the near-death experience. And I've had two other occasions where I've had actually in a doctor's office, where I've actually started to go unconscious due to a medical reason, and I knew exactly what it was going to feel like, which kind of helps because you don't panic. And knowing that, that is the same state that the astral visions were like at night, and it's not like a regular dream.
Now, when you've left,
you can see things.
When you've left the body, you haven't seen a gray core attached to the body.
I did not see any gray or anything
when
I had my outer body.
I don't say that that's not real, because there's one of my close friends. I've heard it a lot on the internet too, but one of my close friends has said that's what she saw. And it's just with myself. You're probably the third person I've spoken to now where that has not been the case. So that sort of just gives me, you know, more food for thought too, because a lot of people say, "Oh no, you've got a gray cord attached." And I'm like, "Well, hang on, I've never seen a darn gray cord attached." But you know, somebody that I do believe, you know, she said she has. So that's just something fascinating for me to think about too. It's the way it is with the paranormal.
Well, I didn't see any grays or anything when I had my near death experience. I've never seen anything appear.
Well, I'm talking
near
about
me.
A gray cord attached from you to your body.
Oh, a gray cord.
Yeah.
That's an interesting. I was free to move around.
Yeah, same here. I could go anywhere and do whatever I want and still do when I get in that state. So,
Yeah. Actually, I could see my body, my hands, my wristwatch on my arm. I could see everything just like I am right now. My hands and everything. I knew I had a head. You know, I had a torso and I had feet because I could feel myself walking. I had weight. I had a sense of weight, but I didn't feel as heavy though as I do in my current.
Yeah, a lot less dense than what you are in the body. Yeah.
Yes. But you do have a sense of all of your tactile senses, like touch with my hand, like in the ship. If I touched anything, when I touched the light, and I actually did touch the hand railing. I do remember putting my hand on the railing. There was substance there, and I could feel it. But that was quite interesting. That was the biggest experience I had was walking around being shown this ship. And Not much technical information was given to me, but since then I've kind of figured that a few things out. It's kind of mysterious how you're kind of led within the first month or so after that. You'll go looking for things on the internet, and then all of a sudden a new principle has been discovered in physics or something, and then you look at it and you're like, well, wait a minute, that's what I was shown. So I think there's a lot of, I don't want to use the word predestination involved in it, or precognition, I guess, is a better explanation. But you just know that you've got to go find the answer.
Exactly, and that's happened to me, myself, many, many times with that type of thing. Something's revealed to you, and then all of a sudden it's in the public domain, and others are working on it or doing this, or they're getting closer to achieving this. And exactly what you mean. Exactly what you mean. And that's fascinating. Well, we'll wrap it up there, Bill, and I really appreciate you coming on the show. And sometime in the future, if you want to do updates or anything else fascinating, or go into anything else, just let us know, and we'll be talking more in the future as we do anyway, all the time. But I'll be putting a link to your book on Amazon, and where people can download this show, so they've listened to the show and find what he's going to say fascinating. Links where you downloaded this episode. That will take you straight through to Amazon. So, Bill, thanks a lot again, and we'll talk soon, mate.
Thank you, Peter. It's been great talking with you.
Thank you. Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers.